Yeah, so my background academic wise is in like literary criticism. So that's so what I'm going to do today, you know, as the title kind of tells you, is presenting an eco-feminist and utopian perspective on the word for world is forest. And we're talking about what that can illuminate for us in the text and then how that can help us when it comes to organising against injustice. I can't get the... here we go. How do I... Sorry, I just try to get a slide. The slide to click on and see how I can do that. Yay! Oh no, that's gone too far. Here we go. So this is what I'm going to cover today. So first of all, I'm going to talk about my working definition of utopia, because I don't think this text is like obviously utopian, because there's some pretty bad things happening. So what is this utopian perspective I'm taking on it? I'll also talk about where I'm coming from in terms of ecofeminism. And then this third point that I've put here, where forest fails, what I'm going to be talking about there is how the structure of the word for world is forest isn't entirely in line with the ecofeminist ideas that there are within it. And then I'll talk about the lessons that we can take from that in terms of how we structure our thoughts and also how we structure any media that we might choose to use to convey our thoughts and ideas to other people. Utopia? Question mark. So first of all, utopia is sometimes used in the sense, in a kind of offhand way, like, well, of course, if in a utopia we'd have world peace, we wouldn't have to worry about this, but you know, this is the real world. Whereas I think that utopia is very much relevant to the real world. So I'm, you know, taking it pretty seriously. But I'm not thinking of utopia as a fixed model of perfection. So many utopias are like this. They are more like a blueprint. It's more like, okay, build the world like this and it'll be a perfect world. But I don't think that's a particularly generative way of talking about utopia. And I also don't think that that's what we've got in the word for world is forest. Arguably, the way that the world was before the Terrans arrived was potentially utopia, but that's not what Le Guin chooses to show us in this book. She's showing, you know, the moment of its destruction, really. So there's something else going on here. So instead, my work, my sort of working definition of utopia is that the word for world is forest is utopian to the extent it presents a critique of contemporary society while also showing the possibility of other ways of being that would be more perfect than our own. So it's like this two-edged thing that critiques contemporary society but also shows the possibility of other ways of being. Now, ecofeminism. So the kind of central idea of ecofeminism is that different types of oppression are linked. So in the words of Noel Sturgeon, ecofeminism articulates the theory that ideologies that authorize injustices based on gender, race, and class are related to the ideologies that sanction the exploitation and degradation of the environment. And what links these different kinds of injustice are... It's a way of thinking, a pattern of thoughts. And this is something that the eco-feminist philosopher Val Plumwood has called the rationalist paradigm. So this is where I'm starting to really see the links with Christian's talk, because there's this idea that in our kind of Western culture, being rational and being reasonable is like where our culture gives like all the power. So the rationalist paradigm is basically this idea that we have in Western thought that man can stand aside from the rest of nature and be like a scientific observer of nature, can categorize nature, can use nature as a resource, and can like improve upon nature. And the thing is that this man who does that is a very particular type of man. It is obviously male, but we're talking about a white, Western, able-bodied, heterosexual man. Like, that is our figure of the man, and then everything else is othered and is as such, like, available for man to make the world as he sees fit. So ecofeminism challenges that binary logic and looks to flatten the hierarchy between man and other. Where I see ecofeminism in the word for world is forest. I mean, I think that Captain Davidson pretty much single-handedly demonstrates how various types of exploitation can be connected and how the masculinist master figure can be the architect of ecological destruction. So right there on sort of chapter one, page one, where we're introduced to Captain Davidson, he refers to the Athenians as creatures, which is really like derogatory and really establishes that he considers himself to be of higher status to them, and he doesn't see them as people and his equals. He refers to women as buxom, beddable, breasty little figures. So again, degrading, and you can see that he just sees them as something for his own use. And he says he believes Earth was a tame planet and New Tahiti wasn't. That's what he was here for, to tame it. So I really see him as the archetype of this man who stands and looks at the world and goes like, right, I'm going to make this into what I want it to be. And obviously, he's not the hero in this book. Like, he's very much the bad guy. So in characterizing him in this way, Le Guin is, well, critiquing and pretty much condemning this kind of figure of you know, the rational man. So while that's like a really strong and definite critique, when you look at the text as a whole from an ecofeminist perspective, the structure of this text doesn't break with these masculinist traditions, this kind of binary logic, even though it has this sort of critique within the content of the text. So first of all, it retains this human other binary in its division between the Terrans and the Athenians, and the hierarchy between them is flipped. So we have the Athenians as kind of preferable, but even so, that sort of binary division is still there. And then we have Selva as the lone male hero of the Athenians. Now, this is a story which is kind of like ubiquitous in Western culture, which is that there'll be some sort of crisis and then a man will come along who can take control and save the day. And I think that this just goes to show how this rationalist paradigm, it doesn't just like govern how we relate to nature and the environment. It's something which is really fundamental to Western thought, and it's there in our cultures. It's embedded like in the stories that we hear and those that we expect to hear. And then if we're not conscious of it and we don't sort of make this conscious effort to do otherwise, it can then appear like in the stories that we write and that we tell ourselves. And I think that that is kind of what's happened in the word for world is forest. In the words of the ecofeminist critic Gwyneth Jones, the Athenian protagonist is male. Explicitly, his wife has been killed in a brutal rape, and implicitly, his whole planet is being raped by capitalist exploiters from Earth. His heroic task is to defend the womanhood of his world. So although it has ecofeminist ideas within it, the form of the actual text is inconsistent with those ideals. So the lesson to take from that is that we need to consider the structure as well as the content of our thoughts. And like, what I need to say here is that, like, this isn't me just going, you know, I'm a genius and I've worked this out, because this is exactly what Le Guin goes on to do herself. So I'm thinking particularly in essays like Science Fiction in the Future, like A Non-Euclidean View of California as a Cold Place to Be, and The Carrier Bag Theory of Fiction. She starts writing about and exploring genres like science fiction, like utopia, and, you know, the actual novel form, and you know, trying to work out if there's a way of doing things differently that would break from some of these traditions. And, you know, I think that she really achieves that in Always Coming Home. But that's another presentation entirely, really. But going back to the lesson that we might take from the word for World is Forest, that we need to consider the structure as well as the content of our thoughts. Like, how would that work and how would that help us when it comes to organizing against injustice? So the benefits of being able to escape that kind of binary logic would include avoiding essentialism. So avoiding the idea that, you know, man is like this, whatever, other is like this, like other people's nature or women or whatever, and that there are essential sorts differences, like even if the hierarchy is flipped, like in the word for World is Forest. Avoiding eco-authoritarianism and avoiding colonial logic. So I want to go on and say a bit more about those last two points that I've suggested. So first of all, avoiding eco-authoritarianism. I've chosen to use as an example here a TED talk by the utopian scholar Gregory Claes. Now, the reason why I've chosen this as my example is because I totally agree with everything he says in the TED talk. And I also know that he's someone who is entirely well-meaning and who very earnestly wants to, through his scholarship, be able to help the world get to a better, like be on a better course than it's on currently. So what I'm doing is I'm choosing something where I can say, you know, I completely sign off the ideas, I sign off the intention, it's only the structure that I want to isolate and talk about. So in his TED talk, Gregory Claes first talks about the dire situation that we're in. He then sort of outlines the parameters for a more utopian way forward. So that's what's listed on the slide, the universal basic income, taxes on wealth, four-day working week, co-op set of corporations, free public transport, real community cohesion, and all powered by sustainable energy. And then he concludes by saying, the only way you'll do it, so the only way you'll bring this about, is by getting out in the streets and making everybody else aware and our governors aware that this has to be done. And I think that's a really sort of natural feeling for what it is that we have to do. Like, we can see that the world is basically being mismanaged, and we want to go out and say, no, everyone, do it this way instead. But the problem with that is that we might then ourselves assume that position of the rational man who's observing the world and says, you know, I've got the ideas to make the world as I think it should be, and I want everyone here, all of you, to help me make this world. And so although it's coming at it with very different ideas, it's still using the same kind of structures of thought that have kind of caused the problems in the first place. And the other thing that I think we need to be really wary of is, especially where we are white Westerners, you know, we've got a 500 year plus history now of going out to the rest of the world and saying, we know the best way to do things, everyone do it our way. And again, that is what's led to crises that we're in. And, you know, that leads me on to my next point, which is avoiding colonial logic. And I want to make the point as well that when I talk about colonial logic, I'm including this idea of like colonizing the future. So I think that everyone it's quite clear that you can't just turn up on a continent like as has been done in the past and say, oh, I'm going to build a new world here and like obliterate whatever's there currently. But when it comes to this idea of colonizing the future, it doesn't necessarily feel unacceptable. Like, you might say, oh, I'm going to write what I think the world should be in 50 years' time or something. And this is something that Le Guin talks about in her essay, Science Fiction and the Future. She talks about science fictions where space and the future are synonymous. They're a place we are going to get to, invade, colonize, exploit, and suburbanize. So that for me really highlights that although it doesn't feel like we're doing any harm by positioning our sort of new world in 50 years or something like that, it is still perpetuating a certain pattern of thought that we would be much better trying to break with. So I want to finish with a bit of wisdom from the eco-feminist philosopher Donna Haraway. So a lot of people will probably be familiar with her book, Staying with the Trouble. So this being, you know, the trouble of the ecological crises and mass extinctions and everything connected with that. So she says that staying with the trouble requires learning to be truly present, not as a vanishing point between awful or Edenic pasts and apocalyptic or salvific futures, but as mortal critters entwined in myriad unfinished configurations of places, times, matters, meanings. And so I'm just sort of putting that there really as food for thought of like what a different structure of thought might be if we were to sort of break from the kind of rationalist paradigm, the binary logic. So instead of this separation between man and others, we are mortal critters entwined in myriad and finished configurations. Like, what would our, yeah, how are our thoughts structured? How are our novels, our films, our lectures, whatever structured if we're at the actual structure of our thought is different. So my conclusion really is just to reiterate that the structure of our thoughts is as important as their content. And I think that is the key lesson to take from the word for world as forest.